general at Providence and Sociology as the beginning of the 21st century. First point, a very simple one. Sociology should be and already is global. ISA had its roots first in Western Europe with a large participation of American sociologists, and then it has carried out permanently an opening toward other countries, first of all the Soviet-dominated Central and Eastern European countries, and then to all parts of the world. And here I would like to take this opportunity to pay tribute to our almost outgoing president, Michel de Lorca, who has devoted large part of his activity to reinforcing an international participation in all ISA activities. It's a very obvious duty for all of us because we all know that no universal principle can be identified with a particular part of the world, as colonial countries did. That must be rejected. Nor can we believe in a total diversity of cultures, which would not permit any communication between them except through war. Second point, from system to actor or crisis of both. This globalization of sociology corresponds to the increasing importance of communications in contemporary societies, and in particular in post-industrial societies, because they call for a worldwide approach. Whereas the study of the classical industrial society, that of metal, chemical industries, were easier to cast in a national or regional framework. These economic activities seem to give naturally central importance to the notion of system. Functionalist sociology, just as much as critical sociology or Marxist inspiration, were the main components of this sociology of systems, which today is declining because globalization means, first of all, for sociologists, the rupture of all kinds of controls and interventions exerted by political or social institutions on a global economic system, which is then no longer a social system. We're approaching here a very profound transformation of social sciences. Instead of systems and actors being the two heads of the same coin, the study of situation and trends tend to reveal the necessity of new analytical frameworks. Whence the renewal of interest for studies on time and space, and particularly on the transformation subsequent to communications in real time or to interdependence of countries, almost all of which were affected or still are affected today by the financial and economic crisis triggered off in the US in 2007 and which was at its height in US and UK in 2008. Constructivism, even in its moderate form, has destroyed the realism which was taken as granted by functionalists. The concept of sex, for example, has been replaced by that of gender and by the rejection of this very concept of gender as being a masculine view of women. The same remark applies to the sociology of ethnic relations, which makes impossible to believe that race is a natural reality. The influence of constructed and not empirical notions comes from the fact that no natural reality can be defined in the same terms by different societies and cultures. Conflicts and movements have been transformed. Conflicts appear now not so much between social adversaries, in particular between classes and nation, as between a globalized world, which is oriented basically to profit making, and all those who resist in the name of personal or collective rights. Moreover, the proportion of people who are locked into precariousness or exclusion is increasing and has been increasing rapidly during the last years. In rich countries, it was almost always above 10%, but now it is between 15 and 25%. And in some poor countries, it is as high as 80%. At the same time, inequality has risen considerably in many countries. For example, in the United States, the dominant impression today is one of a decline of participation, all forms, types of participation in the process of modernization. A larger part of collective life is no longer social. Violence and crime destroy institutions and security. The games of all kinds, from football to reality shows on TV, are not elements of social life because they are, first of all, consequence of the rupture of traditional bounds, and playing is participating only in an imaginary world. And ecologists have demonstrated, after others, that mass consumption is determined more often by economic interests than by consumers' demands. But in a situation of crisis, it's even more difficult to use a concept of agency. So what can we do? We are facing a double intellectual analytical crisis. Both system and agency are in a difficult situation, are difficult to use as explanatory principle. What we observe is that, for example, as George Tomka said, trust as a basic, fundamental notion of economic, as a condition of especially a market economy, has disappeared, for example, and that is extremely important, in interbank transformations. Margaret Archer emphasized that individualistic theory, like the two famous Homo economicus, eliminates properly social actors because they rely on a rational choice approach, which is much more stiff when it is used by economists than it is by sociologists, at least after Coleman, when they reintroduce non-instrumental action into a rational choice theory. At an even more general level, crisis gives a new life to pure power theory from Hobbes to Carl Schmitt. In a very different way, Margaret Archer underlines too the importance within sociology itself of what she calls an homo ex contentus theory, which is represented, according to her, among us by Giddens and Beck. But its end remarks are to underline an opposite view based on the growing importance of new forms of behavior which are little integrated because they are not directly or indirectly commanded by economic processes. Alberto Martinelli has a more optimistic view. Because the economists have been unable to predict and to understand the crisis, and the people now expect better explanations from sociologists. His analysis is an argument in favor of not neo but post-Keynesian economists like Stiglitz or Krugman, who are the first people, first economists to say openly that they need the help of sociologists to understand economic processes. These critical observations impose on us a transformation of our conception of actors, which means an almost totally new approach, as Piotr Stomka rightly underlined, asking for new theoretical adventures which would provide us with a general logic of analysis. Classical sociology defined actor by his or her position in a system, in function of the requirement of the latter. In most instances, in most fields of sociology, this definition has been abandoned. This can be expressed by referring to the return from a positive definition of liberty to a negative one, to use Isaiah Berlin's terms, of which the habeas corpus first proclaimed in Great Britain was the most important example. Benjamin Constant made the same distinction by opposing the liberty of the ancients, the positive liberty of the citizens of Athens and Rome, to the liberty of the moderns, conceived of as a form of defense or protection against absolutism and arbitrary aspects of political, economic, or cultural power. Today, most of us accept with John Rawls this definition of liberty of the moderns. The 20th century was dominated by world wars, totalitarian regimes, and genocides, has lost the previous century's confidence in the construction of a free society giving an affluent life to everybody. On the contrary, we consider those transformation as creating victims and injustices perpetrated in all aspects of our life, personal and collective, by dominant group. Now, in front of these global forces, we cannot oppose specific ideas, roles, or interests. What we need is an equally global force of resistance and creation of alternative patterns of social life. Just as globalization, first of all economic, functions above all social institutions, it can be resisted only by values which are situated equally above the social world. Over 2 centuries ago, the idea of the rights of man was formulated in the first instance by the American Declaration of Independence and by the French Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen in 1789. But it was abandoned during the period of industrial society and even attacked as being bourgeois and superficial because the social rights of the workers were the only real and important ones. But what happened was different, is that gradually our defense of social rights and then of cultural rights were considered as extensions of democracy. For the first people who really entered this transformation, enlargement of a democratic theory were obviously the British failures. But now their pioneering work was extended and transformed by all kinds of social democratic or reform, the regime or reform oriented. These cultural rights, which are so important today, rights of women, rights of ethnic, religious, national, gender, or other minorities, are even more than social rights during the 19th and 20th century, are dangerous as well as necessary and positive, because it can correspond to identity groups, especially religious or national. And the defense of such rights can be easily transformed into aggressive communitarian movement that makes exactly like during in the industrial society, the defense of workers' social rights, in some cases, in many cases, were transformed into the formation and triumph of a new kind of totalitarianism, which was speaking in the name of workers, but which was a dictatorship over them. So we should never renounce to introduce or to maintain the idea of universal human rights, within which are included political, social, and cultural rights. If we do not do this, we may fall into the clash of cultures, which ends up with war. Only the universalism of rights enabled population to rise against the constraints and temptation of globalization and of authoritarian, totalitarian or communitarian regimes. What we referred to society is replaced now by a public space which is dominated on one side by globalization and the other side by human rights. This is the way the idea of society has lost its central place. Here may I take the liberty to remember that it was in Sweden during our convention held in Uppsala that I defended for the first time this idea in a paper which was entitled How to Get Rid of the Idea of Society. Neither globalized economy nor universal human rights are social in nature. It is at this meta-social level that life, liberty and equality are accepted or rejected. A large part of contemporary sociology is devoted to the knowledge of the mechanism whereby these forces situated above society can be transformed into institutions, organization, norms, and forms of authority. Fourth point, from secularization to subjectivation. All these deep transformations lead us to a re-examination of the widely accepted interpretation of modern society or modern history as a process of secularization, as a capacity of groups of persons or societies to act upon themselves and on all aspects of their experience gains in momentum, the idea of a creator superior to man declines in strength and at the same time reason is recognized as victorious and a liberating force. It is not a question here only of a simple aspect of secularism, of a separation of temporal political power from a spiritual one. It is much more than that. Thinkers of the Enlightenment period have declared that the rational secularized world is the only one which constructs through reason, science and technology an increasing well-being. Some of them went as far as announcing eternal peace as a final outcome of this society founded on reasons. Others, after Weber, have recognized on the contrary that the end result is and will be a war of gods. In reality, social thinking is finding it increasingly difficult to deal with the theme of secularization because the observable facts correspond less and less with this definition of modernity, first of all, because of the deadly uses of many technologies. The crisis of the idea of secularization leads us to another definition of modernity, which is based on the idea that value judgment can be no longer defined by the divine message, by traditions, by the requirement of a social system to survive, but only by the effects of a situation or of an individual, of a situation or on an action on the autonomy of the self-government of individual and collective life. Such a definition implies a clear-cut separation between individual and subject. The individual has no core and permanent content. The idea of a multiple self was very creative, and we must follow Freud when he defines ego as only the skin of psychic life, tiny limit between id and superego. The subject, on the contrary, is a principle which gives the right to individuals to become actors, or, using Hannah Arendt's famous expression, the right to have rights. No individual can resist by himself a total power, political or religious, only acting as a subject, he or she can overcome the totalitarian orientation of global powers. The language of fundamental human rights is the language of the subject, and modernity should be defined only by its universalistic orientations, basically by its respect for reason and for human rights. In one word, modernity should be defined as a process of subjectivation. That leads to the disappearance between private and public sphere, so clear to the ideologies of secularization. Social life must be distinct from any spiritual power, but equally respect the creation and defense of the rights of the subject, which are present in each human being in the most varied forms of life, personal and social life, religious or romantic, political or family oriented. A century ago, Durkheim founded classical sociology by stating its central principle to explain the social by the social. Today, we should have the courage to assert that social behavior are always based on non-social principles, whether it be a question of globalized economy independent from all social actors or of the human subject, which is indeed universalistic in itself, in spite of the fact that it has to be incorporated, obviously, into social and historical situation. It is in no way a question here of returning to religion, but on the contrary of recognizing religions as externalized, veiled figures of the subject in society, which still have a weak capacity for self-transformation and for construction of a new environment. Fifth point. From a society of men to a society of women. I can here review the numerous, and I don't want to review the numerous branches of gender or of women's sociology. and especially the very creative queer theory as a general critique of identities. I just want to insist on the necessity to go beyond victimology and even beyond an equality-oriented feminism, which, in my opinion, misses the most important aspect of present-day women's role. This idea must be embedded into a broad vision of our processes of modernization. In Europe first, and then in many different countries, modernization has been achieved by an extreme concentration of all resources, cognitive, economic, political, or military, in hands of a small elite, or an avant-garde, or knights, or conquistadores. This concentration permitted these elites to conquer territories, create machines and bureaucracies, and to control markets. But the semicide of this modernization was obviously a forced and brutal submission of the rest of the population, slaves and workers, colonized nations, women and children, to the ruling elites. But for the past two centuries, this brutal domination has been attacked and, in most cases, destroyed. Citizens have eliminated kings, wage earners have acquired rights, social rights, colonized people have conquered their independence. As a consequence, these traditional but modern model of modernization or development has been progressively eliminated or marginalized, so that these countries which use this form, this path of modernization, became unable to define any new project for the future, to propose any other kind of modernization. That's exactly where women enter. Because women were dominated, as almost all other categories, and they were not allowed neither to participate in public life, it's not so absolute, but they were basically not allowed to build their own subjectivity. The masculine society, which was founded on the rupture of experience on social polarization, has to be replaced by the equality of men and women, but it will be a society of women because it's women who are concerned and who are reintegrating all elements of personal and collective experience, while in the past they were separated by polarization. This interpretation is strongly supported by research findings. The analysis of women's orientation in social life show that they basically want to have two lives at the same time, but as being part of their life and everybody's life, while men they say, are inferior because they know how to do only one thing at the same time, like President Ford, who could not walk and chew gums at the same time. So these women, not leaders, not intellectuals, but I would say all women as a general category, will play and already play a more and more important role in the transformation of most sociological categories and the introduction of a new Weltanschauung. Sixth and last point. The question is unity or plurality of changes. The question is twofold. Do the changes which we have just focused on form a whole? Are they specific aspects of an overall change? In the second place, are these changes and their possible unity observable all over the world? The first questions call for a foreseeable reply. A former vision of the human world was organized around the idea that modernity is a triumph of objectivity and scientific thought. Modernity must rid itself of subjectivity, they say, or rather entrust to psychoanalysis private life and ask it to reduce it to a set of rational hypotheses. This vision indeed have appeared to be modern by opposing reason to traditional belief, all right? But it is a discourse which does not match the facts we observe. After the 19th century, we believed in progress and in science, but did not question the exploitation of workers and colonized people and the treatment of women and children as inferior species. The 20th century demonstrated that the elimination of notions like subject, rights, basic liberties were indispensable, was leading directly to the formation of absolute power without any possible opposition. In other words, all important social movements today share the same general content. They oppose a global economic domination, a global political hegemony, a global destruction of human and other species by an ecological catastrophe. They oppose the destruction of cultural plurality. We used to oppose people up and people down. Now, contradictions, which are more global than conflicts, oppose a global domination to the specificity and autonomy of a variety of actors. And we defend people who are out against people who want to be alone, to be in. As far as the second question is concerned, the comparison between societies in various parts of the world shows that it is relatively easy to assert that there are common problems in all parts of the world, but differences between them, if we take into consideration, first of all, the different distance and exposure of each society to global problems in so-called central societies, which are much more numerous and diverse than before, two different and complementary orientations are visible. Direct opposition, direct opposition to global powers and direct consciousness and defense of universal rights, but that creates at the same time the danger of opening the way to economic, social, and intellectual actors who declare that they are not concerned with problems of power and freedom at home or worldwide. The country is visible in more dependent population. For them, the defense of rights is directly linked with their opposition to global powers. And that creates, at the same time, the risk of opening the way to authoritarian or corrupt powers. My conclusion, observation is that most of the changes we are experiencing, call for the formation of an integrated social science, probably not in the same way as Vico wanted it. But because today the most dramatic dangers appears in the economic sphere, some economists became more and more conscious of the fact that to understand economic life, crisis, and possible solution to the crisis, they had to take into account the work and the field of studies of sociologists. If I had to name the most influential social scientists today, I would select Amartya Sen. Let's follow in our own ways his example. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Thank you, all of you. It was a great moment. Dear friends and dear colleagues, within a few seconds, it will be my pleasure to introduce to you our new president, Michael Broghol. And it's not the moment for me to address you in intellectual terms, because we are now dealing with organization, dealing with the future. Let me just, in a very few words, comment briefly on the last 4 years and on this Congress. A success, I think. And I want first of all thank Ulla Bjornberg and thank the people that have been working with her, and to thank also Congress Company, who did a wonderful job for us and with us. Our associate, well, we can maybe applaud them. Thank you. Association is today stronger. Almost 5,000 persons registered in Gothenburg, while we were only 3,800 in Durban. Our financial situation is good. We are in a process of improving our statutes and of developing internal democracy.
Oh, yeah.
And we are doing more and more for the new generations, the so-called junior sociologists. We are much more than in the past open to the world. About 100 different countries were represented in this Congress, and China is now really part of our intellectual life with 31 participants in this Congress. Let me add that we are also much more open to other institutions that work at the world level, and we are going to be part of it within 1 year. Thanks to Arturo Rodriguez, we created a great innovation with the first forum that was held in Barcelona 2 years ago. I hope the second one, within 2 years, will be qualifications are important, that internet belong to our culture. Now we demonstrate our capacity in innovating in this field. Sociopedia, which was launched 3 days ago, now exists. It's a new concept and a great achievement that combines the best of internet and the existence of excellence. It is free for all our members, and it will be soon proposed with 50 entries, each entry being 6,000 or 7,000 words, which means a lot of work has been done. ISA is on the move, and I am sure that our new president, vice president, and EC members during the next four years will prepare a great congress in Yokohama. It has been a great pleasure for me, a great honor also, to be your president during these last years. Let me now welcome